Hello, everybody. This is the March 17th session of the Oncology Summit, and we have the pleasure to have with us some officers from the European Commission. Indeed, in this edition of the Oncology Summit, we put some effort to confront ourselves with the political agenda concerning research and development in semantic technologies and oncology in particular. We are very happy to have us with us today two important officers of the European Commission who play a major role indeed in promoting and coordinating European projects related to oncology in the recent years. We have Marta Nagy Rottinger, who is the head of the Technologies for Information Management unit of the Directorate General on Information Society and Media of the European Commission, and Stefano Bertolo, who's a project officer in the same unit. Marta and Stefano, the floor is to you.
Hello. At first, thank you very much for your invitation to join your summit. I have to admit, for me, it's the first time to attend on such a conference, so I hope you can hear us well. Do you hear me well?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. I would like to present you what we are going to do in the next.
We are now on slide two.
On the next slide, in the slide two, I would like to announce to you what we are speaking the next about 45-50 minutes, and afterwards, we would like to discuss with you and answer your questions. At first, I would like to introduce you the main policy content related to the topic of today, especially in relation to research in the field of knowledge and content management. Secondly, I would like to highlight you the main ongoing and closed activities in this field coming out from ICT research in FP6 and FP7. As perspective, we would like to explain you our ongoing call and also some activities. In the second part, Stefano will answer you the by Nicola indicated questions. Let me start with a short introduction. You can see on the next slide the structure. For your information, maybe not everybody is very familiar from you with the structure of the European Commission. The European Commission has 32 different directorate generals. It is about to compare with ministries in the different countries. Stefano and myself, we are working in the Information Society and Media Directorate General. In our DG, as we call it, we have 10 different directorates, and one of them, our directorate, is based in Luxembourg. We are calling you now from Luxembourg, from the Directorate Digital Content and Cognitive Systems. Below these, on the bottom of the slide, you see the different units of the directorate indicated, highlighted the Technologies for Information Management, which is our unit, named or signaled by E2. We have also other research units in the field of language technologies and machine translation, but also in the field of cultural heritage, digital preservation, and finally, also in the field of robotics and cognitive systems. The remaining colleagues are focusing on different policy files, for example, to work on safer internet or to work on the reuse of the public service information data. On the next slide, I would like to introduce you in very briefly the main mission, the new mission statement of our directorate general. What is our main aim for the next few years? We would like to work on it that every European becomes digital. You can ask how we would like to do it. We would like to do it by achieving the digital single market, by reinforcing Europe's competitiveness, by increasing investment in ICT research and innovation. And I do believe this is one of the main points why we are discussing today together. And the next point about promoting the access and the use of ICT to the benefit of the EU society or in general in the society. So we are using very often the EU, but for sure we are globally thinking persons. So our colleagues and peers from US or from Asia, Africa, they are also thinking and partially involved in some activities. Last but not least, our Directorate General is also in charge of implementation of different EU laws. This is less related to our activities. Exceptional if we take it in brackets, not law, but data standardization or different kind of harmonization, which is also very important to ensure intelligent information management. Main drivers of our activities and objectives are formalized and written in the Digital Agenda for Europe. What is it? The Digital Agenda for Europe is the first flagship of the main EU policy of the Barroso Commission of the Europe 2020 strategy. Digital Agenda for Europe was the first implemented flagship and includes several parts, including research, how to come to improve the digital life and the digitalization of the society. On the next slide, I just would like to highlight you the main instrument which we are using in our daily work. We are using the overall strategic framework of the digital agenda. As I mentioned, this is the first pillar of Europe 2010, to devise and implement adequate European policies to support different stakeholders across the society. Secondly, and this is the main part of the today discussion and also the outlook discussion, to support research and innovation of the next generation of ICTs. The next slide, this very colorful slide, shows you the main highlights, the most often used words in the digital agenda. It is a very good visualization of the different options and different points, which is very important for us to achieve this agenda. You can see that the largest printed words are the most often used, like ICT, services, but also EU and European. Very often used and important are wordings like digital, online, public services, internet, price, management, but also that I would like to highlight you the issue of interoperability, which you can see on the right side in medium-sized letters written. Why is it important? Why do you believe it? We come back to it a little later on. Now, moving to the next slide, you see the picture of the European Commissioner in charge of the digital agenda. As a member state, just for your background information and for the colleagues from outside of Europe, every member state has a commissioner nominated for the European Commission, and in our portfolio, Nelly Kroes from Netherlands is the commissioner, and she put as her main objective for the 4 years of her working in this portfolio to work for everybody, everybody brings closer to be digital. On the next slide, just a very brief indication why do we believe and why also the Commission believes that it is important to get more and more people to digital life. Because in the past, the ICT, it was an interesting field, it was nice to have, it was a kind of place for testing, playing, but in the meantime, the ICT and the web, digital life became hugely important economically, but also in the scientific and societal means. So today life is for sure not anymore an inclusive one if somebody is excluded from the use of internet or from the use of digital services. Before defining the digital agenda for Europe, there were some consultations and discussions. What is the situation today? We have analyzed, including different experts invited, which kind of lacks, which kind of problems are today there, and what could we do to improve the future life, how we could better contribute to the economy, but also to societal challenges. In this assessment, we have recognized that we are facing a lack of investment in networks. We are facing rising cybercrime and low trust by many citizens. There is a fragmentation of digital markets. We are lacking very often of new skills. We have insufficient research and development activities. Europe is beyond the leading other sites like Japan or US, but also beyond the targeted 3% invest in research out of GDP. But we are also fragmented in answering to societal challenges. And this is why several actions, in total 101 actions have been defined to answer to these lacks, to these challenges. And the common answer of these challenges, we do believe, should lead to a kind of virtuous cycle of the digital economy, creating content and borderless services, enabling new content, enabling new borderless services, increasing on service demands at their level as in life cycles, which will ask for the rollout of networks which create, which support again the creation of content and borderless services. As for your relation to the digital agenda, the most important is to increase the research activities, but also to ensure better interoperability. We will discuss how to answer best possible in this field of the digital agenda. On the next slide, unfortunately, in this part of the presentation, we have no numbering of the slides. After five slides, it will come again. We are showing you who is addressed by the digital agenda. And these lines showed you very, very clearly that the digital agenda is addressing all of us. All of us as researchers, all of us as somehow a job holder, SMEs especially, because the digital agenda gives a very specific attention to support startups and small, medium-sized companies. But it is addressing artists, consumers, musicians, elderly and young people, authors, disabled people, everybody to include, to be included and to have this inclusive society in the digital world. If we move now to the next slide, I would like just to highlight how important is and how do we would like to support the first pillar out of the seven pillars of the digital agenda, the digital single market. And I highlighted you in red the main issues, what is very important for the digital agenda. I have already mentioned the societal challenges. I have mentioned the business challenges. And it is important to highlight that not only the business as it is, but also the creation of new jobs, the creation of new business opportunities, new services, And the work on a digital market is very important. So at this stage, it is to highlight that the activities and the supporting work goes very closely to activities which support the establishing and the growing of the single digital market. In which we, as example, due to online access to legal content, we have defined different objectives for the digital agenda. One of them is to have 50% shops online available by 2020, but also to ensure that in a few years we have an about 20% ratio of the cross-border shop activities or selling activities, which is today really an obstacle for many of us. The next pillar which I would like to address to you, I'm only addressing three of them, is openness and interoperability, shown on your next slide. Openness is very important, but in our discussion, if we speak about ontologies, if we are speaking about semantic technologies or even the data management, which is our main focus, it is extremely important to work towards real interoperability. I know you could tell me now that interoperability is nothing new. We have started working on it. But due to the fact that we are facing growing sources and very different data from sensors, from machine-generated data, different formats, etc., the issue of interoperability remains very actual still today. How we would like to address the improvement of openness and interoperability is showed by the three examples of recognize and create more and better standards in Europe. And this is also one of our main aims to achieve by the end of the flagship, to make better use of these standards, so not only to define together with the stakeholders the standards, but also make better use of these, and to ensure interoperability even in areas in which standardization is either absent or it does not make sense because of the character of the field. As third and last pillar from the agenda of the digital agenda, at this stage I would like to go on by the next slide to ICT research and innovation, just showing the difference between EU and US in the research invest, and to show that Europe is interested to increase the funds. The aim is to double the investment to 11 billion euros and to support light and fast measures to access, which is extremely important, for example, for small and medium-sized companies to ensure faster reaction to niche markets, but also the administration process to lighten. And a second example is to ensure better coordination between European and national private and business-related research activities. How we would like to do it is described in the next slide in the digital public services, in the sense that EU citizens should use more e-government activities and service opportunities, and the member states have online cross-border public services then by 2020 100%. As an example, we have given here the e-health access for EU citizens, but I am aware of it that, for example, between US, Japan, and Europe, there are also intensive discussions on e-health and access to e-health data and project in this field. The next slide shows you the planned governance cycle of the digital agenda. The digital agenda is monitored by the established scoreboard. The scoreboard is yearly shown to the member states, and the indicators which are in the scoreboard developed are monitored and reported to the member states, and at the same time also to the European Parliament. We have been in very intensive cooperation with different stakeholders, and the stakeholders have been invited to take part in this process, active, direct and indirect, due to surveys, due to participation in different events, etc. And the representatives of the stakeholders are invited to join the Digital Agenda Assembly, the first one after the 1 year anniversary to see, of the digital agenda will be held on the 16th and 17th of June this year in Brussels. And the Commission will deliver, based on the scoreboard, based on the harmonization with the Member States and the European Parliament, and agreed with the different working groups of the Digital Agenda Assembly, a yearly communication on it. This written communication will be sent then finally to the European Council to close the governance life cycle. After presenting you the digital agenda and this main policy strategy context, on the next slide, I would like to start to introduce you the Community Framework Program and the Research and Development Framework Program. This slide shows you the in-depth development in the last 20 years, over 20 years, which is related to pan-European research programs from FP1 until today FP7. It is very impressive if we see the last column of the FP7 showed in turquoise column, hopefully in your case is the same. So the last one showing an extreme large increase of the budget, although it needs to be considered that the last FP program is for 7 years, the others were 4 years, but nevertheless the increase is very significant. The community framework programs are implemented through specific programs and work programs. For the time being, the FP7 has three specific programs. One is addressing people, the second is addressing infrastructure, and our main source of activities is addressing cooperation. The community framework programs in FP7 build about 6% of Europe's civil research and investment. As I mentioned to you, our activities are in the cooperation program. On the next slide, on the number 17, you see the different portions and the different topics and thematic fields addressed in the seventh cooperation program, having a total budget of more than 30 billion euros. And fortunately and very positive for us, you see also that the red part of the cake, the red piece of the diagram showing information and communication technologies is the largest one. So we have 27% of the budget, 9.1 billion euros for the 7 years of the framework program. But it's also important to know for you that in this ICT part, as we name it, we are addressing also ICT fundamental research and also ICT application research, which is partially related to the other part of the cooperation program. For example, we have e-health, that is a part of health program. We have the energy program, but ICT as enabling technology also address other societal parts of the program. On the next slide, you can see the main aims of the seventh framework program, which is to reinforce Europe's strongholds in different fields. At first, in network and service infrastructure, to improve communication equipment and services, business, software, security solutions, etc. Secondly, in the field of components and embedded systems, in the field of semiconductors, equipment, photonics, plastic electronics, or nano and microsystems, embedded systems, vertical markets, for example, cars, medical, telecom, energy, etc. So you see that especially the application components embedded areas are extremely broad, and market and application areas. So less theoretic research, but very close to real applications and use. Last but not least, the third part of this the third part of the aims packet, a strong academic research community, so building communities, stakeholder groups in diverse disciplines relevant for the information communication technology in field of ICT itself, but also in application fields, and bringing new interdisciplinary communities like biotech with ICT relation or for materials, but also cognitive science. You could also ask the question how we come to the work program, to the framework program definitions, and you will find the answer on the slide number 19, in which we describe you that we have carried out more than 100 thematic consultation meetings and workshops in order to define with stakeholders, with industry, private, and social networks together, the main parts of needed research. We have organized thematic web consultations also for the definition of the next work program. We are working with strategic research agendas of European technology platforms and the joint technology initiatives. We have involved the ICT advisory group, which is a group of university research institute and business companies representants, a very high level advisory group, including several CEOs and rectors of universities, professors, leaders of main research institutes. Additionally, we have also had consultations with national research and development programs in order to define the best possible thematic fields. On the next slide, number 20, you find the main challenges of the ICT work program. The ICT work program has now a structure of challenges. We have eight named challenges or research areas defined, and in all of these areas are different research fields addressed. I don't want to go one by one, just to highlight that our main field of activity is the number four, the technologies for digital content and languages, in which we are supporting language technologies, but also our main intelligent information management activities, digital preservation, and is part also an SME initiative in this field. In the other fields, because this is also the main area in which ontologies and semantic technologies are addressed. In the other fields, we are facing a growing number of applications of ontologies or semantic technologies, for example, in the health area, also in the inclusion or aging well area, but also in the area of low carbon economy. As a technology-driven approach in the part of technologies for digital content, as I mentioned to you, this is the number four of the challenges, and application-driven research in which close to the market or closer to the market oriented projects are running and uptaking fundamental research are in the challenges 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And on the bottom of the slide, you see also the different areas, which I partially mentioned, and partially are additional to these. On the next slide, just we'll bring you to the next topic. So after the description of the European policy context, now I would like to show you the knowledge and content management and semantic technologies in ICT research, what has been done so far. On the next slide, we start with the FP6, Information Society Technologies, and come on the slide 25 to the main focus of knowledge and knowledge management and content creation in FP6. The main focus of our activities was in this field, having funded 62 projects out of already 60 finished, so we are finishing only the remaining two. In this field, we have contracted 700 different entities, and the European Commission has paid 270 million euro funding in this area. The main emphasis was on generic enabling technology development, flexible cross-sectoral applications and platforms. On the next slide, you have more detailed indications on the main research challenges of the SIX framework program, including the mentioning of the call, which was historically developed. Here I just would like to make more information on the content and knowledge. This is the second part because this has the closest relationship to your activities in which intelligent and dynamic content management was supported, access and management through metadata generation extraction and semantic annotation, which is the closest and most important point in this context of today, indexing, but also contextual retrieval, automated workflows, aggregation, and personalization. The third topic in the list is knowledge management, which was addressed even in two calls, in addressing the intersection of web, multimedia, and knowledge representation, including SendWeb Plus activities in the form of network information and communities, automation of knowledge lifecycle, web, multimedia documents, etc. We have had additionally the audiovisual search engines in call 6, which included also automated knowledge discovery and extraction, which is the main point to highlight. On the next slide, you see a colorful or blue-dominated presentation of the project portfolio in the area, clustered in four main areas, multimedia, text, knowledge representation, and services. And you can see in these clustering also the interrelation between the different project activities, and you can also see that most of the projects were addressing knowledge representation in different senses in different forms. We have put also this slide here for your information. If you go to our website, which will be communicated by the end of the presentation, you will find to all of these projects background information, which kind of research has been carried out, who were the partner, which were the results, which can be an indication and comparison for future ideas, but also a source of ideas and a source of information for future activities. In the seventh framework program, the main focus, if you go to the slide 29, was in the first two calls, in our call 1 and call 3, continuity of content and knowledge management with slightly different approaches and different focus, but the main issue was how best to improve and enable content management and knowledge management. You see that there were content creation and processing, development of media post-production tools in which there were very exciting results achieved also. Just as an UNICAT, one of the projects received even one of the members of the one project for the work in one of the projects, even an Oscar for the film contributing to Avatar and 2 years ago. For you, most important is the third part of the research topics, the knowledge management in the range of business and public interest domains, but also the development and founding of semantic wikis and the idea of semantic wikis. Furthermore, it was a fund for integration of social software and semantics for better social interactions and social networks in business and private environments. For semantic foundations, including 3D objects, personalization and summarization, and reasoning, especially in temporal, dimensional, and uncertainty points. On the next slide, you can follow me on the main addressed research in call 5. And at this stage, you will see that the main work program team and addressing is differing significantly from the previous focus. So from 2010 on, the main activity or the main focus of the research portfolio and the new activities is on large data sets, on management of large data in real-time dimensions, the data processing. We had a call with very big resonance. I will show you afterwards some facts and figures. However, we had the main five areas of teams addressed in the submissions for capturing tractable information and delivering pertinent information, which was the highest ratio, collaboration and decision support. Personal sphere was underrepresented, especially compared to what we also expected. And impact, cooperation, strategy development, etc., it was less than 5%. On the next slide, you see the completed project portfolio of the FP7 calls so far, so the first three calls in which we were attending, collected and grouped in three different groups. Sorry. In online content, interactive and social media as the biggest group, followed by knowledge discovery and management, on the right side of the slide, and on the bottom, reasoning and information exploitation. For this project portfolio, I have again the same suggestion for you. If you are interested on more information on it, just go to the website and you will find several activities on it. In the second part, we are going to show you also some projects, examples, even including ontology topics in that field. On the next slide, we just would like to show you the main achievements. This is the slide number 32. The main achievements are to get main advancements, more scalable processing methods for multimodal and multimedia information, novel and better scaling reasoning methods, advanced algorithms for data and knowledge mining, novel real-time techniques in the field. The most representative domains in the retained proposal were medical service, is medical science, data management, product engineering, but we had several addressing of earth science, financial and business intelligence, management of large online communities, and improvement of linked data resources and public governmental data. Now we come on the next slide to the already mentioned facts and figures in the form of the call, the three calls. And the main message of this slide is that demonstrated in all these calls that our research area is extremely well known and extremely well requested. So on the one hand, we are extremely happy to get such large number of proposals. On the other hand, we are facing the situation to have 1 to 10 success rate, which is annoying all of the participants and everybody involved to see if how big is the chance to succeed. So for the ratio of the different fundings, you see that it is extreme competition, and if somebody submits one proposal and does not succeed, this is not because the proposal was not good, but there is such high competition and many different areas to address, so we see this an extreme strong area. In total, we have 48 projects involving more or less 400 contractors for 170 million euro funding in this area. You want to take over? At this stage, I would like to hand over the presentation to my colleague Stefano.
Yes, so what you will see in the next slide, we are now on slide number 35, are examples of projects that came out from the early stages of the Framework Program 7. So that's the Framework Program that we find ourselves in. These are here to give you an example of what has been funded today and why. So on this particular slide, you see a short description of the IKS project for Interactive Knowledge Stack. And it's important to notice that the motivation for the project started from the needs of small companies that need to add intelligence to components that are already standard in their industry. So the idea of IKS is not to develop a completely new system, but to audit, if you like, the software stack that small enterprises already use so that they are familiar with those components and understand what those components can do for them and try to enhance them with various forms of semantic annotation and reasoning capabilities. So I stress this because in order for this to succeed in terms of delivering innovation, the project decided to start from a point that is already familiar to web developers, for example, and add semantic on top of that, as opposed to start from a sophisticated ontological program and try to work downwards towards the software stack. So you will see this pattern in the next few projects as well. So I'm now switching slide to the next one. Here I am briefly describing the OntoRule project. Their goal is to lift knowledge that is relevant to business rules. So if you work for a corporation, For example, there probably is a rule that determines under what conditions you are allowed to take how many days of vacation. And your vacation requests are approved or denied based on whether you do in fact follow these rules or not. So you can transfer the same reasoning to all kinds of organizations. So essentially, any organization which has business processes that are documented more or less formally has certain compliance constraints that it wants to apply on those processes in order to determine before the processes are carried out or to verify after they have been carried out that the processes were being executed correctly. The problem that this consortium identified by working with a specific partner that has a specific business need is that these rules were often somehow buried into code, that the rule was not made explicit for business owners to reason with, but was somehow buried into the actual implementation that could only be reasoned about by the software developers. So the rule has as a goal to cause business rules to surface at a level that is comprehensible to the business owner and get compiled down into an actual software system in a systematic way. So notice the same pattern happening again. So the idea here is that the rule started with a business partner that has specific business rule needs and went in and proposed that ontologies and rules be used in order to manage the process. So the need comes first, the ontology comes later as a piece for the solution of that problem. Moving on to the next slide, I'm going to describe the project called Smart Products. So here the objective of the project is to inject certain very basic forms of intelligence into physical objects. So the idea, for example, is, or the vision, but the vision is really not very far from reality at this point, is that you could have appliances that have some form of situated awareness. So the first point to notice is that many appliances today are in fact networked devices. So if they find themselves in a Wi-Fi network environment, they can determine where they are, at what point in the temporal scale they exist, and possibly what other devices exist in their environment. So if you have a task that is normally carried out across different appliances, these appliances will have the ability to become aware of the fact that they are part of the same process or activity. Now, why is this important? Because appliances are becoming more and more complex. So their functionalities may not be immediately obvious to the user of the appliance. However, to the extent that the appliance understands under what conditions it is being used or what specific goals the user may have in mind, they may proactively make available to the user the specific part of their documentation that would help the user make the best use of the appliance. So it is a way, if you like, of managing the complexity of the product by making the product aware of the specifics of its usage. That's one objective. The second objective is for the appliance to keep a log of the conditions under which it is being used. Now, this is immensely useful for manufacturers of appliances, because at the next iteration of the design of the product, the designer can go back and understand how appliances are being used in practice, so that the parts of their function that are in fact exercised by the user can be optimized, and the parts of their functionalities that are in fact not used very frequently can be redesigned. So again here, notice same pattern again. So there is a specific real life problem that is being addressed, how to design very efficient appliances that would cooperate with the user instead of struggling with her. And the tool for solving this problem is in part ontologies. Ontologies of physical parts, ontology of capabilities, ontologies of processes. So the problem comes first, the ontology comes in as a part of the solution to that independently identified problem. Moving on to the next slide, this is an overview of the work program of our unit for the next, for the current and the next year, 2011 and 2012. So I'm now going on to the next slide, slide number 42. So the idea is that the objective of our unit for this particular section of the work program is that content and knowledge should become abundant and accessible. So they should essentially become, for industrial processes or societal processes, the equivalent of electricity. So in most of the developed world today, you don't have to worry if there is electricity flowing out of the socket when you plug in an appliance. It is assumed that it's there. So the end goal is to make the availability of content and knowledge as reliable as electricity. Of course, notice again the interoperability problem that comes in. So when you plug in your appliance into a socket, there is a standard that's different between the United States and Europe, but there are standards nonetheless that tells you the voltage of the electricity. So the problem that we are in part addressing is what standards can be designed in order to optimize the production and reuse of knowledge at a very large scale, and how this will favor the sharing and reuse of knowledge resources. Moving on to slide number 43, you see that we have recognized and identified semantics as a component of the solution to this particular problem. And again, if you look at the bottom of the slide, you see that organizations and communities are central to this process. So those are the stakeholders, as we like to say around here, who define what the problem is. Ontology developers work with these stakeholders to help them solve their problems. But the problems are being identified and defined by these organizations and communities. Moving on to the next slide. So what are the general challenges that we are trying to attack in this section of the work program? Well, several. So in organizations, information grows very quickly. There are, in fact, a growing amount of data quantities, and this will be the core, the centerpiece of an argument that I will be making in the second part of today's presentation. That information is also multimodal, that there is unstructured data, that data and data sources are heterogeneous. So here you see again the need for interoperability, that these data sources are often complex, which means that you need to be able to reason about them. The last line, if you like, it's a timely reaction to the climate of these times. So many people, for example, Peruvian economist Hernán de Soto, have argued that the real basis of the financial crisis of the year 2008 and following has been a crisis in knowledge management, because the financial system was not aware of how risk was in fact distributed. So all the pieces were there, but they were scattered across agents. And so nobody, the agent at the end of the chain did not have a realistic view of how the risk had been building up upstream. So that is a quintessential knowledge management problem. And so some of the challenges that we are trying to support, I mean, the solution for which we are trying to support in this work program, also include various forms of shock, in particular financial ones. I'm now moving to slide 45. So this gives you in a capsule the main idea for the work programs that we had in the years 2007 and 8, where intelligent content was our goal. In 2009 and 10, where we focused on large data, and now moving on to, sorry, to 2011-2012, there is a typo on that bullet. So here we are addressing actually two specific problems. We are trying to make digital content easily available to small and medium enterprises. So we use the acronym SME around here. And the second problem that we are trying to solve is, again, information management with a focus on extremely large volumes of data. The labels that you see in parentheses there, S041 and S044, stand for Strategic Objective 4.1 and Strategic Objective 4.4. These correspond to formal calls for proposals that we have already issued in the case of the initiative for small companies, and which we are about to issue sometime in July for the next one. So going on to slide 46, very briefly, we have a call for proposals which has already been called, and the deadline for which is on the 28th of April, 2011, where we are inviting consortia to build data pools that could be exploited by a number of actors, and in particular, small and medium enterprises. And the idea here is to do for data what the likes of Amazon or any other cloud computing provider you may think of has done for the software stack and for storage and SQL. So if you buy service on a cloud, you don't have to buy very large number of servers. You don't have to buy software. You buy these functionalities as a service from the cloud provider. So, in other words, the ability to pay for these services as you go means that you only pay exactly what you are consuming. So this reduces the capital requirement of services and promotes innovation, because it is now possible to launch a sophisticated service by making very, very minimal capital expenditures. So in our consultation with various stakeholders, we have realized that the same is true about data as well, that many services today rely on the availability of extremely large sets of data. However, if each provider of such a service had to build such a data pool by themselves, that would create a barrier to entry to the delivery of such services. So in this call for proposals, again, deadline 28th of April, we are inviting proposals for consortia to assemble, curate, and provision data pools on which large number of providers, and in particular small companies, could build their own services. And now moving on to slide number 47, that gives you the main requirements for participation in the call for the Strategic Objective 4.4. So this will be published sometime in July, and the deadline for submission of proposals will be sometime in January 2012. So here, the idea is that there are many domains in business or also in our society where the availability of data grows faster than our ability to interpret. So we are inviting proposals for people to build essentially power tools for carrying out analysis of extremely large amounts of data. And the idea is to increase the economic value of data resources by extracting more intelligence out of them, and also specifically by allowing for such intelligence to be extracted at the same time scale as the process they're meant to support, which in many cases means very, very close to real time. So again here, from the point of view of characteristic mindset of an ontology developer, the idea is that there is obviously a trade-off between the sophistication of your representation and ontology and the cost of reasoning with that ontology. Cost not just in terms of the cost of developing an ontology, but the cost of actually reasoning with that ontology in real time. So any ideas that you might have, together with colleagues who work in inference, on how to speed up inference is appropriate for this call. Moving on to slide number 48, we are actually going to have a networking event to take place in Budapest on the 19th and the 20th of May, where we will be presenting the objectives for this call in more detail. And these events tend to be very useful events for networking and building partnerships with other European partners. Because one of the things that most Europeans probably know by now, but may not be very familiar to US developers, is that European projects are always collaborative. So at the same time, we have always two objectives in mind. We want to support research and development, but we also have as an objective that of integrating research and development activities across Europe. So for this reason, proposals for the projects that we fund always have to come from consortia of researchers and developers from all over Europe. In fact, from European area more broadly. Moving on to slide number 49. So this gives you a little bit more detail of the kind of information that you are likely to receive if you decide to attend this event in Budapest. And now on the next slide, which I think is now number 50, you find more information. You find the URL there, which is the URL of our specific unit. Another thing that you may find interesting is that we are actually also pretty present on Twitter. So I personally run a commentary on the development of these calls, and I tend to use the hashtag S441 for the call on SMEs, on small companies, and S044 for the more general one. So I'm now moving to slide number 51. Where you also find general information about Framework Program 7, which is the program that is currently running. The second one may also be of interest to you. So that is a database of experts. So when we receive proposals, we need to, and Marta explained to you, that we typically receive 10 times more proposals that we are able to fund. We need experts to help us evaluate those proposals. So if you have an interest in helping us evaluating these proposals, and we are typically writing out reviewing contracts, we pay you to come to Brussels or to Luxembourg to read the proposals and help us rank them. If you have an interest in participating in these activities, the first thing you will have to do is to visit that expert's database URL and register yourself as an expert. And there are a couple more URLs that repeat the information from the previous slide. I'm now moving to slide number 52. So I am now finally, 1 hour and 20 minutes into the talk, reaching to the actual title of the talk. So a lot of people who work in ontology have a philosophy background. And so here I was thinking of structuring our observations by borrowing a famous sentence from Kant, who wrote that thought without content are empty and intuitions without concepts are blind. So ontologists are primarily concerned with the definition of concept systems and the interrelationship between concepts. Between concepts. These concepts, however, eventually ground into a number of instances that belong to these concepts. So what I'd like to show you in the next few slides is a personal reconstruction of what I believe happened in the research and development landscape and what its founding consequences have been in Europe over the last 6 or 7 years. So, and I think, I hope I'll be able to convince you that there has been, for reasons that are part of much broader developments, a shift, if you like, in attention from the world of concepts to the world of data. And that anybody who wishes to apply sophisticated ontology techniques as part of the project that we are going to fund over the next few years should take these developments into consideration. So I'm moving now to slide 53.
Please add one to the slide number called out by Stefano from here on. So when he says 53, go to slide 54 instead.
So Framework Program 6, which ran, I'm sorry, that's a typo again, so from 2002 to 2006, we funded a fair amount of work in ontology. So, for example, we funded a very advanced ontology editor, which is called NEON. We funded work in ontology mapping. So you have two or more ontologies. How can you develop methods which semi-automatically either establish a correspondence between concepts from the two ontologies or establish bridge rules that detail that correspondence. We, in particular, funded ontologies for semantic web services. So what kind of conceptual distinctions and constraints can be expressed in such a way that a request to a web service could be translated into its own internal implementation, even if it is conceptually different from the format of the request. So the next slide, you will see a screenshot of the NEON ontology editor. And moving on to slide number 55, I want to give you an idea of what that ontology editor was designed for in order to make the point that it really was primarily about assembling sophisticated conceptual models. So as a point of practical interest, this is an Eclipse-based ontology editor, so it is essentially built on top of an infrastructure that software engineers by millions are using the worldwide. And it has a pluggable architecture, so it provides some very basic functionalities which can be augmented by means of additional specific modular functionalities that can be directly imported into this environment by means of plugins. It is multi-platform, so it runs on Linux, Windows, and OS X. It is being distributed under the Eclipse public license. So that means that you can go and download the editor and you can use it for essentially any purpose you like. It is actively maintained. So although the project ended almost 2 years ago, the team of developers is still working on it. So the latest release is version 2.4.2 and it came out just over 10 days ago. it is fully documented. So in addition to having a written documentation, you have 39 professional quality screencasts that show you how to use the editor and how to use the plugin. It has had thousands of downloads. So I myself downloaded almost every release and was able to verify that it installs and it works on my machine at home and the machine at the office. Now moving to slide number 56. So what was the main intuition behind the Neon Ontology Editor? By the way, I hope that at least a few of you who are listening to this now have in fact also downloaded and experimented with this editor. So the idea was to do for ontology development what software developers have learned to do a long time ago. So software developers typically work in distributed environments. So that means that I here in Luxembourg could be writing one module, and one of you in the United States or in Korea could be writing a different module, and eventually it all comes together. Software developers work on versioned software components. That means that I can track what specific version of my component did what, and I can roll back if there is any defect that is being introduced by a new one. They also have catalog supporting search of component and reuse of components. They also have a sophisticated development environment that support modularization. So they help breaking down complex functionality into sets of modules that have clean interfaces to one another. So the very same concept can be applied to ontology development as well. Neon also has advanced functionality for mapping, as we said before. So you import one ontology from developer A, a second ontology from developer B, and you now have a problem of identifying what are the relationships between concepts that are found in the two ontologies. The other thing that Neon supports is very rapid prototyping, and in particular the ability to mine very large textual repositories for identifying important concepts that need to be covered by your ontology. Moving to slide 57, I'm now giving you a sense of the switch to an age of web-scale data. So in 2009 and 2010, we funded work on slightly different projects. So I'll give you four examples. So we have a project called Occam that just ended. So the motto of Occam is that entity identifiers should not be multiplied beyond necessity. So Occam is a system that allows me to assign an identifier to an entity of interest and make it public, so that if you, in your application, also wish to talk about the same entity, you can reuse the identifier that I have published. So to give you a very concrete example, there is an Occam ID that denotes me, Stefano Bertolo, as an individual. Every piece of mail I send out has my Occam identifier in my signature. If you wish to refer to me as opposed to the other two or three people in the world who are also called Stefano Bertolo but are not me, then by using this identifier, you will be able to make this identification completely unambiguous. And Occam is meant to work at web scale. So it essentially has an address space that works on a 128-bit system. So it can produce it's essentially on the same order of magnitude of IPv6. Moving on, so we also funded extremely large-scale reasoning system. We have two projects, one called LARC for Large Knowledge Collider. This is about to end. It will end in September. which developed a modular architecture for inference engines. So every inference problem has essentially two components. There is the clever part of the inference, and then there's a heavy lifting that has to do with the import of assertion and the caching of intermediate results, for example. So LARC does all the heavy lifting for you, leaving you able to concentrate on the clever part of the reasoning. A second project, Linked Open Data 2, that just started, has as an objective to support by its end, which will happen in about 3.5 years, the ability to reason on stores of RDF triples in the trillions of triples. So that is essentially two orders of magnitude bigger than what we have today. We have finally another project that you should be following. It's called L80s.
Due to connection problems, the session was interrupted for about 10 minutes here during the live session.
Finishing slide 57, I'm now moving on to slide 58.
By the way, you should add one to the slide number called out by Stefano.
Lifting from something that Chris Welty said at a meeting we had at the International Semantic Web Conference in Galway, Ireland, in 2005. So Chris said something really simple but really, really important. So what he said is that in the semantic web, the part that is new is not the semantic part, it is the web part. And this has a number of very important consequences, which we saw unfold in the years that followed it. So in 2005, the amount of semantically formally defined material that was available on the web was not very large. So by and large at that point, the largest ontology available was the friend of the friend ontology. And that was itself mainly the preserve of tech and ontologically savvy individuals that were connected to one another. The situation has changed enormously in the years that followed. So what has happened? So when you go to slide number 59, what you see there is a snapshot from Google Trends that is plotting searches for two different search terms, ontologies in blue and linked data in red. So this is a picture that is really telling an important tale. There is essentially a crossover point at the end of 2007 where it becomes obvious that people started to become more interested in linked data than ontologies. In essence, more interested in how to represent extremely large knowledge systems interconnected on the web than in modeling important and sophisticated conceptual distinctions. So I believe that you invited Marta and myself to your forum to give you our perspective on what the ontology community can do in order to further its goals. So looking at this slide, my advice would be that you really ought to try and bridge the interesting and the interest gap that has wedged itself between ontologies and linked data between 2008 to the current day. And I have a number of suggestions, which, again, are based on an analysis of two things. An analysis of the kind of data which have become available since 2008, and an analysis of the specific policy objectives that we as the European Union have that Marta told you about. In my opinion, if you understand both of those factors, there is an important opportunity for the ontology community to become relevant and productive in the context of European progress. So, The title of slide 59 is that web data happened. That all of a sudden, you had large number of people and organizations publishing large amounts of data on the web. So what kind of data? Well, look at the next three slides. So starting from slide 60, what you see there is a picture of what the linked open data cloud looked in the year 2007. So you have, you can see there towards the top, the friend of a friend ontology that I was mentioning before, and you have DBpedia immediately beneath. So DBpedia is, if you like, the RDF projection of Wikipedia, and several other knowledge sources. So that was 2007. Next slide, slide 61, this is what the linked open data cloud looked like in 2008. So almost double the number of resources available online, but not just available. That's the important point, interlinked to one another. Slide 62, this is what the picture looked like in 2009. Again, almost a doubling of the amount of information. There is one specific ontology that I'd like you to for you to look at, and it's the Open Calais resource that you find right in the middle of the cloud. Open Calais, many of you know, is a very high volume information extraction system that Thomson Reuters offers as a web service. So it's a mechanism that takes as input textual documents and returns RDF annotation of concepts and events that are identified in the streams. Open Calais, you should know, processes approximately 5 million documents every day. It has a mass today, this is a figure that I picked up approximately 1 month ago, something like 90 billion RDF triples. And this is only growing and accelerating. So you must understand what volumes RDF data are being generated. And the slide on the next slide is what the linked open data looks like as of, I think, September 2010. So I think we're looking there at something like 4 or 5 billion triples. Plus there is this black mass of Open Calais data. So conceivably, we are today in the neighborhood of 100 billion RDF triples. So that is a lot of data that can benefit from various forms of conceptual refinement. And that's, in my opinion, where the ontology community should concentrate its effort in terms of opportunities. I'm now moving to slide number 64. So a number of other things also have happened. So governments are often made fun of for being very backwards in terms of their technology thinking. But interestingly enough, in 2009 and 10, and today in 2011, it is actually government who have actually taken the lead in the publication of very, very complex knowledge sources by means of semantic technologies. In 2009, the government of His Majesty in the UK opened up its data initiative, and part of that data initiative, as you can see on the slide, but you can verify that by visiting the website, is actually provisioned in the form of linked data, and it exposes a Sparkle endpoint which you can use to actually query the data. Moving on to slide 65, you can see that the U.S. government as well has its own translation services, if you like, which make available data from the data.gov initiative, again, in RDF. So you can read there the figure that there is today approximately 6.4 billion triples of open government data available to the community. Moving on to slide 65. So this is happening in Europe and the other places. So this is what the catalog of open data of the Catalonia region in Spain looks like. And again, you can see that many of the data sources that they offer is available in RDF, and the portal also exposes a Sparkle endpoint. The European data are also, if not always natively published as RDF, they can be very easily transformed into RDF. So what you see there on slide 67 is a screenshot of linked open TED. TED stands for Tenders Electronic Daily. Tenders Electronic Daily is a publication, an official publication of the Publications Office of the European Union, where every day billions of euros in calls for tenders are published. So if you are a school in Poland and you need to purchase plumbing, you can publish a call for tender for that particular service on Tenders Electronic Daily. This is published in a structured format that contains a control vocabulary for describing what specific service or good you're searching. So the good people of the Open University figured out that it was an interesting idea to take that structure format and actually turn it into honest-to-God RDF. And with that done, they were able to offer additional services, again, opening up a Sparkle endpoint, which you can use to make very structured queries about calls for tender. And again, remember, this is not an academic curiosity anymore. This is an RDF structure representation of a system where billions of euros of tender ride every day. So just to give you an example of where the data are coming from and what kind of data there are. So what other kind of data came online? Well, an e-commerce web of data has happened. So what you see there on slide 68 is a linked open commerce website, which is essentially an aggregation of commerce data that has been published using the Good Relations Ontology due to Martin Hepp, which incidentally was partially funded by one of our projects from FP6. So if I'm not mistaken, there is about 1 billion triples that describe goods and services, their availability, their cost, where they can be picked up, that have been harvested from all over the web. So it is possible today for a web shop to publish its catalog using the Good Relations Ontology and to specify exactly what goods and services they are offering, for what prices, under what conditions, and at what location. When you crawl the web for such data and you aggregate them, you can today assemble approximately 1 billion RDF triples. Incidentally, you may also know that Google is supporting the good relationship format for its searches. So there is now an added incentive for people to use this ontology to annotate their offer for goods and services, because this is making it easier for that offer to be found on Google. So if today we have 1 billion triples for linked open commerce, it is not inconceivable that this could go very, very quickly in the near future. So other kinds of data also have happened. So biomedical data. So what you see there is the front end of the linked life data portal. That's an aggregation of over 5 billion RDF statements from various sources in the biomedical domain, like UniProt, PubMed, Entragene, and so on. And again, so these resources are growing very, very quickly and are being interlinked very, very quickly. So moving on to slide number 70. So my prediction, my personal prediction, based on, again, there are two legs to the argument I'm trying to make. The one is, what is the European Union trying to accomplish as a matter of its policy? The second leg of the argument is, what are the trends that we can observe and document as far as the availability and the growth of knowledge systems that will benefit from a more sophisticated conceptual treatment. So based on these two legs of the argument, my analysis for the ontology community would be that in the European funding context, for the next 5 to 10 years, ontologies will have a place, definitely. But as long as they satisfy two important constraints, they need to advance a policy objective. So this policy objective could be innovation, the ability to develop new services, commerce, very important. So, you know, just put the two pieces together. I showed you a structural representation of calls for tenders. I showed you a structural representation of offers of goods and services. So you essentially have the two sides of the market. So a tender stream gives you the demand side of the market. An e-commerce ontology gives you the offer side of the market. So it seems to me that there is an immense opportunity for conceptual systems that are able to bridge this demand with this offer. So consider this as an enormous opportunity. E-health, again, the structured representation of health record and transmission in a way that is secure and interoperable. Energy efficiency, another very important policy goal of the European Union. So as long as a community, you identify problems that require conceptual clarification and interoperability, and they conform to this policy objective, there definitely is a place for you in European R&D for the next 5 or 10 years. The second constraint is that such conceptual system should be able to operate at extremely large scale, because as we showed, that is the scale that the world is moving towards. Now, another thing is that ontologies will have a place in this ecosystem as long as they bring insights into data sets. So as long as they help you see things that you could not see at the level of granularity and conceptual distinction that these data sets natively offer. So they should be able to support important inferences and also to be resistant against conceptual brittleness. Because when you have data sets that run in the tens or hundreds or thousands of billion triples, you inevitably are going to have various forms of inconsistencies. And ontology work on top of those data, so this would be the famous Kantian concept that now have an enormously well-trafficked grounding, need to be able to resist against that kind of inconsistency. Going to slide 72. So, Nicola sent me a number of questions that he wanted me to address. So, do we see any specific requirements or desiderata for ontology application framework? So, in this respect, we are completely agnostic. So, use what you think would work best for you. However, something that I feel I can say is that having just funded the development of that sophisticated ontology editor, Neon, I was telling you about, it is really hard to imagine that we would fund another one. Or there would really have to be an extremely good case for doing so, particularly because Neon is an extensible ontology editor. So the way to go would really have to be to develop additional modules for that environment. The other one is that the principles of NEON, which are the principles of ontology reuse, ontology modularization, tool support, and robust engineering, remain important. So the important message here is that ontology development must be conducted in industrial strength. So it can no longer be the preserve of brilliant, deep, but isolated thinkers. Now, Nicola also asked me to give you some ideas on what we would see as value metrics. Again, our advice is going to be that you have to start from a process that today seems to require or invite important conceptual management. So the value metric that we always recommend is to measure the cost or the value of ontologically naive process, then measure the cost and value of its ontologically sophisticated counterpart, obviously taking into account the cost of developing the ontology in the first place and the cost of maintaining it. If you can show that the ontologically sophisticated counterpart has an acceptable cost and brings a lot of value, then there is your value metric. Nobody argues with success. Page 74. So what kind of value models I invite you to consider, we invite you to consider? Well, so the point here is that there are certain environments in which sophisticated ontologists really do decrease cost or add values. And that may not work across the board. So our advice would be for you to become aware of what big problems really need solving and see yourselves as solvers of those problems as opposed to developers theories that may be interesting and deep but do not connect visibly or measurably to the solution of certain problems. And also show under what conditions you can amortize the cost of developing a sophisticated ontology because such ontologies are being reused across a large number of actors or possibly domains. So slide 75, 76. So another question that Nicola asked was what kind of applications and case studies we see as relevant. So our advice here, again, is to follow the data trail. So three very simple recommendations. Look at the volume trail. In what domains is data growing the fastest? Because that is likely to be an environment where intelligent conceptual distinctions are likely to have an important and valuable effect. Also look at the value trail. So if you have a repository of biomedical knowledge, that is likely to be more valuable, or its intelligent treatment is likely to be more valuable than something that has to do with personal entertainment or other forms of activities that do not have a very clear industrial value. Also, very, very important, look at the integration trail. So where does it happen that you have data flows that need to interface? So this may happen across industries. So you may have a certain industry that is a supplier of a different kind of industry, and the two need to exchange data in a way that is intelligible from the perspective of their respective processes. You can see across legal systems. So to go back to the policy objectives that Marta was telling you about before, of having a unified digital market. So one of the constraints is that in Europe, we are a union of 27 countries, and there are legal differences across these countries that impede the development of a unique digital market, or across disciplines. So any situation where you have a conceptual systems that somehow need to interface is right domain for sophisticated ontology to be developed. Page 77. So what Nicola asked me, well, what strategy would you recommend for making the case for ontology? So I would recommend the really simple strategy. So first identify either a large group of people or a very wealthy group of people that has a conceptual modeling problem. The next step is assume that this group knows or doesn't want to know anything about ontology. So don't try to sell ontologies as such from the perspective of a sophisticated researcher. Try to solve their problem first and solve it to their satisfaction. So once you've done that, you can remove you can lift the curtain and show them how exactly you did it and show them that an ontology was part of the solution. So at this point, there is a proof that your ability to develop and maintain sophisticated ontology is in fact solving a problem they have. So once you've done that, then ask for the next problem. So you will quite likely enjoy a more enthusiastic reception than you would if you first try to convert them to the importance of ontologies before having attempted to understand their problem and much less solve it. Page 78. Last question that Nicola asked me to give my our opinion on. So grand challenges. So what kind of grand challenges do we see for the next few years? Well, one is the one I mentioned before. So in systems that manage enormous amounts of data, there is bound to be inconsistencies of one form or other. So the challenge that I think ontology developers need to face is that they need to be able to support graceful degradation of conceptual systems in the face of inconsistency or even just uncertainty. Another grand challenge that I think I could point out to you is the distinction between the theory box and the A box. So we are now essentially, even just 5 or 6 years ago, it was not uncommon to see sophisticated T-boxes with a lot of concepts with interesting relationship to one another that would ground on a really puny number of instance examples. Now, as I think I have documented in the previous slides, the situation is exactly the opposite. You have enormous terascale A-boxes that are essentially crying for a sophisticated T-box to be built and maintained on top of them. And this means that inducing the T-box from the A-box, refactoring, not only based on the number of instances that are being described, but also on an analysis of how actual end users interact with those instances. So there's much to learn there. And if you like, it's a new style of development ontologies that are meant to respond to actual usage patterns. And there are evergreens that remain important, like the ability to audit processes before they are deployed or to verify compliance with the process after they've been developed. Here, I refer you back to our project contour rule. Page 79. So this is a personal favorite of mine. So I think that anything at all that looks like a synthetic biology open language research project is likely to be very welcome. So why do I like this specifically? Because this is a domain. So synthetic biology, if you know, it's an attempt to engineer biology parts that are engineered to carry out specific biological processes. And this is really important because it's at the basis of several industries of the future. One of them, for example, is biofuels. So if your objective is to extract energy from biomass, you typically want to have organisms that are able to digest the biomass and release as a byproduct something that we can use as a fuel with given important characteristics. So this is essentially the task of developing building blocks of living organisms that have carefully specified functional relationship to one another and have carefully specified inputs and outputs. So if you like, it's a process that is part engineering, in fact, biological engineering, but in also equally important part, a big process of knowledge engineering, because part of the problem of engineering a system is knowing what the blocks do, knowing how the blocks can be put together, and knowing what the expected behavior of those blocks are. So this is, I think, a fantastic example, because this is a domain that is growing in an explosive fashion, where there really are almost two equal parts of actual physical engineering and knowledge engineering. So I mentioned this as the last example, if you like. Try to ride on the coattail of something that is really very complex conceptually and growing very rapidly, and whose growth cannot be sustained unless there is a sophisticated knowledge infrastructure that regiments its growth. So anything that has these characteristics that you can identify talking to your colleague is the kind of work that we are certainly welcome to consider over the next few years. So that was the last slide on our deck, and I think we are now, we'll stay online ready to take your questions. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thanks Stefano for the great talk, despite the
the telephone connections. The floor is open for a few questions. We don't have that much time, but still we want to have some questions. Please use the chat room for asking your questions. Maybe Steve, you have a question already. Maybe you can go ahead.
Hi. This is Steve. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Steve.
Oh, okay. Actually, I did have some questions, but you tended to answer them in that last section, which was basically, I'll make one point of clarification, which was the five or six questions that Nicola asked you with the various titles like an application framework were not really intended to be interpreted to be, are you interested in funding application frameworks? That's more the approach we are going to be taking in this summit to try and organize the spectrum of applications that exist out there. However, you did answer our core questions, I believe. My question that I had put on the chat board had to do with distinguishing between the kinds of business case, if you like, or the case that would be made to, say, a funding organization like the European Union as distinct from the case that would be made to commercial stakeholders. And you sort of touched on both of those, I'd say, by focusing on solving the problem, which I would imagine be the case for the stakeholder, and the grand challenges is what I'm interpreting as the kinds of cases that you as in the European Commission would be receptive to. Am I on track with my interpretation there?
Yes, I think you are, Steve. And I would like to expand a little bit on what you're saying. So you, I think, very rightly identified that there may be different kinds of conversations that could be going on with a private sponsor and with a funding organization. So a private sponsor would essentially tell you, well, this is my problem, and I want it solved, and it is not important to me if what you do to help me solve the problem also helps other people. The funding organization has a slightly different perspective, which is it possible to develop components that can be reused across different domains, or, as we kept pointing out in the policy part of tonight's presentation, is it possible to identify standards for the extraction, storage, and reuse of knowledge that would help communities that need to interoperate but today can't do so effectively? So, if you like, in an industrial environment, I would imagine the primary concern would be performance. In a policy environment, however, it's equally important that one should be able to identify, if you like, points of friction, and which of these points of friction could be solved by the development of conceptual systems that would allow interoperability where today doesn't exist. Now, I can be even more concrete than that. So, problems of that nature exist in many different environments. But again, it is a point of our policy that in Europe, certain things are particularly important for us. So, the three examples I gave you are digital single market. So, what goods and services could be exchanged online today and are not, because we have different legal or conceptual systems across countries. Extremely big problem, very central to the digital agenda. Two other ones are electronic health. So how do we collect, store, and exchange electronic health records? The third one is energy efficiency. Are there lessons that are being learned in Portugal today that could be applied in Poland tomorrow? Is there where an efficient way of making this information circulate and be reasoned about? So those are three examples that do not immediately require an industrial application, but rather the identification of shared conceptual models.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Peter, go ahead.
Actually, it's one question that Steve had on the chat board earlier. My question was, do the numbers on the funding include just European Commission funds, or does that include all the research funds that went into ICT, for example, from both the government and from industry?
Okay, so let me repeat your question to make sure I understood it. We presented several slides with a number of figures on the amount that went into research and knowledge management. I believe you're asking, do those figures represent funding from the European Union only, or are they cumulative from the European Union, other funding agencies, and industry? So if that's the question, the answer
yes,
is that the figures you saw only represent the amount of funding that was made available by the European Union.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Could I follow up with that? This is Steve Ray again. On your slide number 13 in particular, you show the USA investing, more than double the investment. And I know that from the, I thought from the government perspective, the European Union, actually government or commission, was investing more than the United States government. But when you compare it with United States private sector research, that's when the U.S. goes higher. That was the source of my question.
So here I have to be honest, this is a slide that I inherited from those who prepare the main presentation on the digital agenda. What I know, and this is I think I can document, is that in the European Union we have an objective for member states to invest at least 3% of their GDP in research and development. And again, I know for a fact that the USA are investing much more than that, and Japan is also investing more than that. Also, the amount of, I believe that the figure that you see there for European Union is the amount of European funding, not the amount that member states invest. I don't know if Marta has knowledge of this. So if you're interested in the specific, I can research the question for you and let you know the straight facts. Off the cuff, that's my understanding, but I may be mistaken.
Okay, that's fine. Actually, there was a very self-serving motivation behind my question, because in the past I have argued before American agencies that the European Commission is outspending the United States, and therefore we should be getting more funding here in the U.S.
So, Steve, what you're saying may be true for certain domains, and in fact, in the specific domain of knowledge representation, I believe that you are in fact quite correct. But the slide number 13 is summing over the entire spectrum of research in information and communication technologies. It's not just about knowledge management.
Maybe. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. There is Christopher now. Christopher?
Star 3.
Also, there is also Rex queuing. Maybe we can let Rex ask his question.
I can say it pretty quickly. In making the case for ontology, it seems to me that the explosion of data in the last 10 years, is especially unstructured data in textual form, is a big argument in our favor for ontology, provided we don't just make an explanation about ontology, but we supply real solutions. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, I couldn't catch that. I wonder if you could repeat it at half the speed.
Okay. In making the case for ontology, it seemed to me that the explosion of data, including unstructured data in text form, is a big argument in our favor. provided we offer real solutions rather than explanations about ontology. Correct?
Right. So I think that was the argument I was going to develop. However, I would like to expand on your question in one particular direction. So you mentioned specifically the availability of unstructured data. My
yes.
personal opinion is not where the main part of the game is going to be for the next 10 years. So perhaps this is true today, but it's becoming less and less true as we speak. And I'll tell you why. So this depends on two concomitant factors that have to do with hardware, strangely enough. So there are, if you look at the trends for both the cost of manufacturing and the energy requirement for sensors, you will see that they are both dropping very, very quickly. That means that in the very near future, you're going to have an extremely large number of sensors that are distributed in our environment. And very many of those are going to be networked. A consequence is that you're going to have an extremely large number of data streams that represent the things that are happening in our environment right now. Now, the thing with sensors is that since you know their functionality, and since they transmit their data according to a specific protocol, they actually are very, very structured. So you're essentially, so the switch from large amounts of textual content to the management of extremely large number of data streams, that it's a switch, if you like, from extensive materials that are covering an extremely disparate type of concept to astronomically large data amounts that cover concept types that are fairly circumscribed and fairly well understood. So perhaps my personal conjecture is that what you're going to see a lot of is, if you like, an interpretation of what these streams of sensors actually mean in terms of events that we recognize as having importance from the human perspective or for the perspective of industrial processes. So if I were to bet where a lot of the work and a lot of the interesting work is going to be on the next 10 years, I would rather bet on sensors than textual understanding.
Stefano, I will bring you the question asked by Christopher Spottiswood, who has problems with his mic. So he says, isn't there a quality problem with those quantities as linked data triples? And so basically, his question is about the quality issues with linked data and the role of ontologies for them. Maybe I can build on this. I'm not sure I capture his question. Concerning linked data, you brought us stronger evidence of the opportunity offered by ontologies to bridge the gap between, let's say, concept and data and so on. But it seems to me that at least many people working and pushing linked data now are not really feeling the need of these concepts on these ontologies. Some of them at least keep insisting on the fact that they only need very simple, very poor ontologies and in a sense as if linked data can exploit their value as themselves without the need of ontologies.
Right. So I think I can give you a specific case that I'm familiar with where I think we are very close to an inflection point. So the case I have in mind is the product ontology that Martin Hask has recently made available in support of his good relations ontology for the advertisement of goods and services. So the product ontology that Martin has made available recently, this is just last month or so, contains something like 300,000 classes that have been essentially synthesized from entries in Wikipedia. And now, if you read the description page for that ontology, Martin very openly points out that at the moment there is essentially zero axiomatization of this ontology. So it's essentially a very flat catalog of a very large number of classes. So the point is that it's probably a useful thing to do to assign a little bit more structure to what is now very flat taxonomy. Why is that? Again, this is my personal conjecture, and in fact it's almost like a hobby horse at this point, but again, think about the interactions between the an ontology that advertises availability of products and services and a stream of calls for such products and services as can be identified from the tenders publication. And imagine that somebody had an ontologically sophisticated description of processes and functionalities. So if you were able to identify that somebody has bought or is requesting to buy timber and is also requesting to buy bricks, then if you have a process description that explains to you how a house is built, you can conjecture that perhaps this entity is in the business of building houses. So the same ontology may also tell you that in addition to timber and bricks, you also need plumbing and window frames to build a house. So you can infer by reasoning that the entity that is requesting bricks and timber may at some point in the near future also requesting to buy plumbing and window frames. So this is something that really requires a layer of knowledge representation and reasoning on top of the brute fact that today somebody is asking to buy X many tons of timber. So that is where I think enormous opportunities exist today for people willing to do the extra work of knowledge representation. That is my conjecture. But again, I would be willing to bet some good money on that.
I guess we should close the session here.
Nicola, I have a very simple request. For purposes of our internal reporting here, would you be able to let us know who was present at this forum?
Sure. All the records are from where? Yes. All the records are on the Ontolog wiki page. Also,
okay,
there is the whole recording of the conference and also the record of the chat discussion.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks to you, Stefano. Okay. Thanks, and we hope you will be able to follow the continuing discussion on the Ontology Summit, ending up with the face-to-face event in April. I know you cannot attend that, but we all really hope you will continue following this activity. Okay, Thank you, everybody, for attending this nice session. And bye-bye, everybody.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.